Ole Miss head baseball coach Mike Bianco joins us today on Sports Talk Mississippi, streaming at supertalk.fm and supertalktv.com. And a week from today, it's here, college baseball season. You're playing a baseball game a week from today.
Yeah, and you know, I say it every year, you know, when the season ends and you get to summer and summer camps, recruiting, draft, and you start to fall, and this time of year seems so far away. You know, it's a distant memory, but you just kind of put your nose down and the blinders on, and you get to work, and then all of a sudden it seems like in a blink of an eye you're driving to work and you see, you know, hundreds of kids lined up just to set up their chairs, you know, in the student section, and you're a week away from the start of the season.
That really is a remarkable thing. I mean, obviously the crowds in right field and throwing beer in the air and the whole deal, that's become a thing. But when you talk about a week before the season starts, you got people lined up from the gate all the way out to Old Taylor Road. There may be 1,000 chairs out there with people waiting to get in. That's kind of different level.
No, it is different level. And so many coaches, and I understand it and get it, you know, talk about their fans and the atmosphere and, you know, the support. But there's nothing like this. There's nothing like this in the country. Search far and wide. There's programs that have nice stadiums and programs that draw well, but nobody has students camping out, and literally, you know, hundreds of kids last night camped out, you know, like some rock concert to get tickets, and a week before the season, but over 24 hours before they opened the gates, just as you mentioned before we got on air, just to set your chair up for a game that's, you know, a week away. So
this is like Duke basketball stuff, like, yeah, Krzyzewskiville.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And just you know, I don't know about that, but our kids went out, you know, our players went out yesterday, and Garrett Wood and Peyton Chatagnier and some others brought some what they call garb, you know, just, you know, some clothing items and some autographed bats and stuff out there. Kind of had trivia with the guys, and I should say girls too as well, all the students out there. And then this morning they went out. We have a team breakfast every Friday morning, and then they brought out they usually bring donuts, or usually I bring the donuts, but they wanted to do it this year. The, you know, our student athletes, our players, normally it's, you know, about 10, 15 dozen, and they were 25 dozen donuts and wasn't even close to being enough. And so, it's neat. It's neat to see the support. It's neat to see the excitement in the air.
And then the rest of the stadium also, over 8,000 season tickets. Mm-hmm. This is, I mean, it's been a process, right, to get to this level of support and this level of demand. But you've gone from, you know, 1,200 people in the stands for an SEC game to selling 8,000 season tickets.
Yeah, pretty cool. And it is a process. And, you know, I remember when I got here trying to convince the athletic department that, you know, we have to sell season tickets. We don't have to sell a season ticket that's only SEC games only. We don't have to do that. We can sell a full season, and we can open up the outfield, not just at SEC play or not just in the weekends, but all the time. And there were some, I don't want to act like it was just us in baseball, but there were some that were believers. But, you know, it's gradual. It's been 22 years, and, you know, when you host your first regional, and I always thought, and I've told coaches, you know, once you host your first regional and people get shut out of getting to the game, you know, that's when you really see the demand of season tickets. And you know, fortunately, you know, we've had a lot of success and great fan support, so that ticket's been that season ticket's become important.
You hate it when I ask you to compare a team to previous teams, so I'll try to shy away from that, but I guess I'm asking it anyway. Have you had a team where you had this much returning offensively? And it's like almost 1 through 9 is back.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. And I think it's just – and it sounds like coaches speak, and maybe it is. We don't look at teams like that. I know it's great for you know, radio hosts. It's great for fans to talk about, to compare. You know, I try to stay out of those arguments and comparisons because there's no way to really judge that. All I can say is we're really good offensively. You know, we were good last year, and we returned just about all those pieces and a few new ones. And so the expectation for the offense obviously is through the roof and well deserved. You know, when you look at the All-SEC preseason team that came out yesterday, I think we had five guys on it without having Justin Bench. How about that? We had five guys, and Justin Bench, who was All-SEC first team third baseman last year, wasn't on either the first or second team. So he was left out, and we still had five players, which I think led the SEC's amount of players on the first or second team. So it's not a secret. You know, we should be able to score some runs, hit the ball out of the yard. The other thing that comes along with that offense is they're returning position players, so we should be better defensively. You know, we continue defense is one of those things that kind of evolves, and as those guys get older, obviously they get better defensively as well.
You mentioned Justin Bench. He's been here a long time. He's done a lot. He's played a lot of different spots. What's his best position?
Wow, that's hard. All of them. You know, we say a lot in this office, wherever he plays, you know, he's the best at that position on the field. You know, he's, you know, likely to either start at third base or center field opening day, and probably the next day play the other. We'll probably play him in both. We've done that here in the early spring to really find out where the other pieces of the lineup fit the best. And that's a luxury to have that kind of guy, that's that type of utility player that you know he's going to be in the lineup. And it really doesn't matter where you put him, but it allows some other people opportunity to get on the field. And terrific center fielder, terrific third baseman. But if something was to happen to Jacob Gonzalez, he would probably be the shortstop. And so not a lot of people say that. And so, yeah, he's terrific.
Has recruiting outfielders changed? And I ask that in light of, I feel like, you know, if you're talking about Bench, you're an infielder that plays in the outfield. McCants was an infielder that has made the move to the outfield. Are there guys that are still, they grow up as true outfielders? Like they've been a center fielder, they've been a left fielder since they were 10 years old, and they've got a cannon, and that's where they want to be.
Sure there are, and it happens. And, you know, we've been fortunate that we've had some guys that are really good athletes that grew up playing in the middle of the infield. Yeah. That on a given year, they may be the shortstop or the second baseman, but, you know, we've had a pretty good run of shortstops here. You know, and so when you look back, you know, Greg Kessinger, and then, you know, you look at Anthony Servideo, you know, Anthony played outfield. You know, Anthony played 16 games at shortstop probably in his career here at Ole Miss, and, you know, was, you know, like a third rounder, you know, in the draft, you know, as a shortstop, and signed for nearly $1 million, and literally only played like 16 games in 3 years at shortstop here. And so when you look back at when you have that many good shortstops, sometimes the other shortstops, because they're good players, have to move somewhere else. And so that's happened for us, and we've been fortunate. But, you know, not just, you know, Bench and McCants, but how about Kevin Graham? Kevin Graham came here as a third baseman. You know, he's out there. Tim Elko's played outfield, and he's an infielder by nature. So I think I don't want to say it's changed recruiting, you know, but, you know, there's some guys in the past that were able to move out there, but, you know, it doesn't mean that we won't recruit outfielders. We have, and we have some, you know, in the future that are coming here.
Servideo's the outlier. I think I talked to you about this last year. But really going back to Cozart, you've had this run of 3 year starting shortstops. And I'm assuming that every coach in the country would like to have that kind of stability at that position where you've got a guy you can plug in from day one as a true freshman, and he starts for 3 years, and he produces, and then he gets drafted in the top five rounds and moves on, and you do it all over again. How is it that you've been able to replicate that Cozart and then – Errol Robinson, and then I guess Servideo for a year and Kessinger, or maybe I've got those backwards, and now doing it again with Jacob Gonzalez?
Well, I think it's what I just said. It's that, you know, we put a premium on those positions. We put a premium, you know, on shortstop, put a premium on catcher. You don't want to, you know, find yourself sitting there in March or April saying, hey, we're not good enough at those positions. You know, there's going to be weak spots of your team. They better not be shortstop. They better not be catcher. Because they dramatically change your team. And those
what's
are,
the third in that line? If it's shortstop and catcher for the first two, what's the next spot? Is it center field?
Well, I would say they're not the first. I would say, having the right guy on the mound, being able to have an ace, right? So you got to have an ace. And then after that, but if you recruit shortstops, the point is if you're worried about that position and you're recruiting shortstops, you're not just recruiting one. There's a huge competition like happened to Anthony Servidio. So he just happened to get here where Greg Kessinger was a superstar, and so he doesn't get to play shortstop for a couple of years. So he plays a year right field, he plays a year second base, and waits his turn. Some other guys like McCants and others move to different positions in the outfield, and maybe that's where they find a home. And so I think it's just really us, feeling that position's so important, so you better make sure that you have enough.
Visiting with Ole Miss head baseball coach Mike Bianco on Sports Talk Mississippi. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. Continuing with Mike Bianco, Ole Miss head baseball coach, a week from opening day. You said a second ago when you were talking about recruiting, putting a premium on certain positions, shortstop, catcher, focusing on that. When you say premium in scholarship language, does that mean dollars?
Yes, but I think more specifically we don't look at it that way. We don't look at it as the currency that you're spending to get that position. Although it's kind of unique because you don't ask football coaches that, right?
Sure.
You don't ask basketball coaches, but our scholarships are divided up into percentages, so it's a means of currency. It's really bodies. The scholarship's just a means to get the guy here. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if he's on 70% or he's on 25% at the end of the day, or he's a walk-on. We got guys out there that don't have any athletic aid, and some of them are the best players on the team. And so at the end of the day, the scholarship is just a means to get him here, to put that puzzle together, put the pieces of the puzzle together. So I don't think we ever really look at it that way. It's really about ability. It's about bodies, and that we have enough guys that we feel comfortable that out of these three guys or out of these four guys, somebody's going to emerge to be the best shortstop, or somebody's going to emerge to be. You look at our catchers. You look at Dunhurst and Harris and LaPosser. It might be the three best catchers that we've ever had here at one time, in the program.
Well, the reason that I asked that was I'm curious if it feels like with some of the conversations that have happened in the college athletics world, specifically with Greg Sankey recently, and just all the change that's happening, if it feels like maybe for the first time there's legitimate momentum toward moving beyond being an equivalency sport, or at least being at 11.7.
Yes, and I think probably for the first time in my 22 years as a head coach here and 30 years plus in coaching, I feel that at some point that will change. The 11.7 or go to a head counter sport versus an equivalency sport, which for the layperson that means, that a kid gets a scholarship and that scholarship's a full scholarship. That's what football does. You're a head counter sport, so everybody gets the same scholarship versus an equivalency sport where you divide the scholarships up. As you mentioned, we have 11.7. So does that mean we get more? Do we get to 15? Do we get to, 18? Where does that fall? The way it changes, the easiest way in my mind to understand how it changes, and it's not just scholarship, it's coaching limitations and getting a paid third coach versus a volunteer coach. That's only going to happen, in my opinion, when we go from Division I to separate, and I don't want to say it's the Power Five, but you can't have 300 schools deciding the rules of college baseball, just like in football. In football, they wouldn't have the rules that they have now if 300 schools, because you have the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
And when you talk about adding scholarship, you're talking about finances, and there's schools that can't afford some. There's a lot of schools of the 300 that can't afford 11.7. You know, they're competing and they only have 7 scholarships, or they only have 8 scholarships, or they can't afford to have 2 paid assistants right now. They have a paid assistant and a graduate assistant, right? So they're not going to vote to have another paid assistant because they feel they're at a disadvantage. So as long as that, I think process is the way it is, it's going to be hard to change. But I think for the first time, there's hey, can we do this? And not that there's momentum, and I don't want to scare people, because there's things that you have to think about as well, where if you change the landscape of college baseball, and it was like football where there's 100 and whatever 15 schools, you just took away 285 schools to compete for the national championship and the College World Series in Omaha, Nebraska. They're going somewhere else to compete. You know, the old 1AA football, right?
Sure.
And so then you lose a Coastal Carolina, right? Then you lose a Georgia Southern or Louisiana Lafayette, and programs that have been really good. You lose that Cinderella story that some people love, right? And it makes our sport so great. Is it worth it? You know, the powers of people have, it's not going to be up to Mike Bianco. It's going to be, you know, people that are well above my pay grade that'll, you know, figure all that out.
Baseball strategy question. You've never been the late Augie Garrido. And if a guy gets on base on first, you're bunting him to second, period. No more conversation. Doesn't matter who's at the plate. But there was a time where you used the bunt to move guys into scoring position more than you do now. I was looking at the number. I think last year you had 6 or 8 sacrifices the entire season. What's gone into that, the evolution of how you use moving guys on base over time?
I laugh when people talk about the bunt,
Okay.
because
Because there's some people that absolutely hate it, and then there's some people that swear by it.
yeah, and it's kind of like our society, right? You know, that it's amazing.
Well, where are you going?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going there, but you know, it's amazing. Everybody's got an opinion, and I get it. But I remember a time where we bunted here in a super regional to move a guy up, and people booed. You know, and it was a successful bunt, right? And people booed. And now I'm known as the guy that doesn't bunt.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I got booed.
I
That's
don't
not what I'm getting
know.
at. And it's really not to pull some analytics out. And I don't mean that, where there are analytics that can show you time and time again where to bunt a guy from first to second, you know, statistically is not a great move. But remember, those statistics encompass all the bunts. They don't encompass what hitter's coming up and is he hot, and that's part of what makes baseball so cool, right? Is
Yeah.
you start to look at a lineup and say, I'm bunting him because I want this guy to bat with the guy in scoring position, and so on. And so it's happened more recently because we've been better offensively and we've been worse bunting. So as a coach, to me, it's not a smart move on some of those teams in the last few years. I hope that we're able to bunt more this year. I hope that we're better bunting.
You ready to get
That,
booed?
yeah, I'm sorry.
Are you ready to get booed?
Well, I think, you know, people just want to win. So at the end of the day, if you win, people will be happy. And so now Augie took it to the nth degree where they led the country. And I think in 05, I think he had 85 sacrifice bunts. Man, it
That
may,
team could hit too.
yeah, well, and it may take us a decade to get 85, you know, sacrifice bunts, but we would like to be better than we were in the last couple of years, and I think that's a deficiency from us. Even though we're very good offensively, and at times we don't we shy away from the bunt to let the guy swing, we'd like to have that bullet in our gun. I think that, you know, we need to be better at that. Sometimes your personnel dictates that, though.
Let's talk about pitching for a couple of minutes. Even in years where you have not had a returning ace, you seem to have kind of figured it out on the mound. You've obviously got Derek Diamond coming back, but he's not pitched in that Friday role. And then you've got some new faces that people kind of expect to be part of the rotation, or at least to get a shot to be part of the rotation. What do you make of this pitching staff? Is this going to be one of those years where people look up at the end and are like, wow, he really figured it out on the mound?
You know, I think we're better than we were last year, and that's hard to say, you know, with Nikhazy you know, Hoagland and Broadway, but that was it. So if you talked about guys last year, you only talked about those three, and really one of those three stopped pitching in April. And so when you look at last year's club, when even I said that, you kind of frowned.
I did.
I think we can be better than we were last year because I think we'll have more options. Will we have somebody as good as Doug Nikhazy? I don't know. I hope so, but I don't know. But on any given year, whoever you're returning, it's going to be hard to have somebody better than Doug Nikhazy or somebody better than Drew Pomeranz or somebody better than Lance Lynn. But collectively, will you be better? Mm-hmm. You know, last year, you know, we had an ERA in the mid fours. I hope we're better than that. You know, so, and I think we can be. I think we have more depth. I think we have more options. On Friday night, the goal would be, can we get somebody that can give us an opportunity to win with this really good offense? And then collectively, can we be good, you know, in the back end the games and not just, you know, be so reliant on, you know, on one guy. You know, we like that guy. That'd be nice to have the one guy. But if you remember back, you know, Clement made the comment the other day, you know, when you look at 2014 and some of the other teams that we've had, 2016, where there was multiple guys in the bullpen. And on any given night, it might be Weathersby or Short or Will Stokes or Aaron Greenwood and other guys that when they came in, they were reliable. They finished the game. They may not end up, you know, with, you know, 17 saves like a Taylor Broadway, and that's nice to have that guy. It's nice to have the Scott Biddle. But when he threw three innings the day before, it's nice to have somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's what got us last year. But some guys emerge from that. Sometimes, you know, those lumps help you. You know, so guys like Jack Doherty, guys like Brandon Johnson, you know, grew up on this team, you know, last year. And so I think, you know, when we look at this team, we feel that depth-wise, we got a shot to be just as good or better.
We'll spend just a couple more minutes with Mike Bianco and wrap things up after a quick timeout. Sports Talk Mississippi, streaming at supertalk.fm in the Pearl River Resort Studios. Mike Bianco on Sports Talk Mississippi, you've been incredibly generous with your time. Just a couple of more things as we wrap up. New faces on the mound. I mean, people have heard Washburn and Gattis a lot, those names. What is Ole Miss getting? What are you getting? What are Ole Miss fans going to see when those guys step on the hill?
Well, you know, John Gattis and both Jack Washburn, two transfer guys, one a grad transfer, both portal guys, but both, you know, a little different way. John Gattis was the Southland Conference Pitcher of the Year last year for University of Texas Corpus Christi and the Southland Conference, good major, mid-major baseball conference where McNeese State plays in. And kid that was going to go to medical school and left-handed pitcher and had a great year and had a year of eligibility and wanted something more, wanted a chance to go to Omaha. And so it was a great recruiting, you know, coup by, you know, Coach Lafferty. We got him somewhat early, you know, in the process of the early summer, you know, at the end of our season, once his season ended. And then Jack Washburn is a big power right-handed pitcher from Oregon State, pitched on the USA national team this past summer. Another guy that, you know, wanted an opportunity to start. To play in the Southeastern Conference. And so those two guys, I think, you know, certainly have a chance to pitch on the weekend. And as we talk about the depth, you know, of returning guys like Diamond, McDaniel, Doherty, Brandon Johnson, and then some young guys like Hunter Elliott, guys like Riley Maddox, you know, Mississippi kids that I think are going to pitch as freshmen. And I really think their ceiling is really high. Will they reach it this year? Will they have the freshman years of guys like, you know, Doug Nikhazy and others where they just kind of emerge and continue to ride that wave? We hope so. But again, as I said in an earlier segment, I think we have more depth than we had last year, more opportunities for guys to get on the mound.
Can Tim Elko be better with two functioning ACLs?
I don't know if he can be better, but he certainly can be good enough to help us win a lot of games.
Can he replicate the season he had last year?
Oh, certainly. I mean, we've had two weekends of inter-squads. He's already got four home runs. He's leading the team in hitting. He's got four home runs. He's got off to a great start. The thing that excites me the most is when you watch him play, he doesn't look hurt. He doesn't look like the guy that's limping around or running slow. He's playing. We've played him mostly at first base. It doesn't mean that he can't play third or the outfield. He's taken some reps, but in the inter squad games we left to try to kind of simplify things for him, just leave him at first base. And he last week he made three diving catches in the midst of like four outs in like an inning and a third, and looks terrific out there.
Final thing. You were recently named manager of the USA Collegiate National Team. You've been involved with USA Baseball as an assistant in years past. What does that mean? Congratulations, first of all.
Well, thank you.
That's really cool. What does it mean, though?
It's really neat, and you know, people say it, but it never gets old. You know, as a guy that's 54 years old, that's worn a lot of baseball uniforms in his life, you know, anytime you put one and across the chest, it's, you know, says USA, it's a pretty cool feeling, you know. And when you step out on a field and you're playing, you know, domestically in our country, and you hear people chanting USA, and it's a different feeling, you know. It's a special feeling, and then to be associated with the best amateurs that our country has to offer, you know. I probably didn't realize it in 13. I was the summer 2013. I was a pitching coach of the USA national team, and to be on, you know, be a part of that. Those 24 guys, I think 18 of the guys pitched played in the major leagues. And you're talking about guys like Alex Bregman, Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, Matt Chapman. These are all guys, you know, Carlos Rodon.
Some dudes.
Yeah, Luke Weaver. These are all the guys that were on that team. It was amazing. I mean, I'm not just talking about, hey, we knew they were really good. We knew they were probably future big leaguers, but these guys are going to be Hall of Famers. These guys are all-star guys, and it's just really neat. It's a neat fraternity to be a part of, and so to do it for the second time and now as the manager is, as I said, it's certainly an honor, but, you know, super humbling.
Did you have any idea that was coming? I mean, how does that happen? Because you were obviously part of USA Baseball a few years ago, where you were the pitching coach when Schlossnagel was the head coach.
Correct. And part of the process, you know, that they do is nobody can be the manager without being an assistant first.
Okay.
It's kind of the filter that, you know, they have, or one of the filters that they have. It's a prestigious job, and they don't want to just give it to anybody. And so I think it's twofold. One, they get to see who you are, your personality, how you fit the culture of USA Baseball. But I think they also, it's an opportunity for you as an assistant to kind of, you know, because you never know what it is until you do something, usually. And, you know, to be a part of that, to be on one of the tours in the summertime, you get to understand what USA Baseball is all about. So it's good, you know, that, you know, everybody that manages has been an assistant at some point before, and but not everybody gets to be a manager. So obviously it's a huge honor.
Congratulations on that. Thanks for your time. Good luck this season.
Always enjoy it, Richard. Thank you.